Question number 11745, Sir Hugh Mackenzie, Reel 2.
Admiral Mackenzie, Reel 2.
As I was saying, we were occasionally dropped into Malta instead of going back to Alexandria for replenishment between patrols. And I never sensed that the Maltese population were demoralized, however heavy the bombing. But to go back to taking over command of Thrasher, when I actually assumed command, and this is October 41, Thrasher had been in Malta for about 10 days, and I think we left on patrol in about 3 or 4 days. So there I was. I'd never heard a depth charge go off. I'd never really met the enemy very much, because discounting my time in Osiris in 1940, this was quite a nerve-wracking experience to take a virtually new T-class submarine. She'd only commissioned at the beginning of the year to sea on an operational patrol. And our first patrol area was off Benghazi. Not a very easy place to effectively blockade. We knew there were minefields off the port. We knew the Italians maintained a swept channel into it. The only navigational mark was the dome of the cathedral in Benghazi. And that and soundings were your only aid to navigation, and you had to be fairly precise as to where you went so as to avoid running into the minefields. I know we had one or two scares while patrolled when our ASDICs picked up what they thought were mines, and we had to dodge around. I never actually heard a mine wire scraping down the side, as some of my contemporaries did. But I knew at times that we were in the minefield and had to wriggle our way out. We saw no shipping worth attacking that patrol, except for a 200 to 300 ton schooner, which was not worth a torpedo. So we came up and sank it by gunfire. From the way it burnt, it was obviously carrying petrol. But that was the first blood, actually, that Thrasher achieved. Her previous patrols, she hadn't succeeded in sinking anything. After that initial patrol, I must say, personally, I felt much happier. I knew my crew. I knew what they were capable of. I knew what the submarine could do. And we went back to Alexandria feeling much happier indeed.
How experienced was the crew?
Well, they'd been together for 8 months or so. And some of them were quite old submariners. They were really a good crew. They were an experienced crew. There were very few sort of wartime entries. And I'm glad to say, you know, that I've kept in touch with many of them over the past nearly 50 years, 49 years. And we still meet once a year, such of us as survive. Now, from then on, until the end of 1942, Thrasher was on a regular routine of patrols anywhere in the Eastern Mediterranean. That's the Aegean, Southern Adriatic, Gulf of Taranto, south of the Straits of Messina, Gulf of Sirte, Benghazi, Tobruk. And a routine of 3 to possibly 4 weeks on patrol, followed by a fortnight in harbor. And we maintained that fairly regularly. until we were put out of action very effectively in August 42, just north of Port Said, when we were leaving to go on patrol, when we were attacked by a Swordfish aircraft off our own side, who dropped 4 depth charges right on top of us. I'm not going to go into details on this because it's already fairly adequately covered in that book on the T-class submarine by Paul Kemp. We had one other exciting episode when we were attacking a heavily escorted ship in flat, calm conditions, bright sunlight, north of Crete in February 42, and we got hit by 2 bombs dropped from an aircraft, which fortunately, or I wouldn't be here now, failed to go off. And 2 members of my crew got the VC for their efforts in getting rid of those bombs and ditching them over the side.
How exactly did they do it?
Well, here again, I don't know how much detail I should go into this, but it is also covered in Paul Kemp's book. Do you want me to expand on it?
If you could a bit, please.
Well, the attack, as I've said, was being carried out in flat, calm conditions, brilliant sunshine, and the worst sort of conditions for a submarine to do an attack in the clear waters of the Mediterranean. I knew perfectly well that at periscope depth, any aircraft could flying over us could see us as clearly as if we were on the surface. And sure enough, just as I fired my torpedoes at this ship, which was escorted by 5 or 6 surface escorts and 3 aircraft, I think, flying around it, as I put the periscope down, having aimed and fired, I heard what was undoubtedly was machine gun bullets hitting the water, and followed by a fairly loud explosion close to. So I reckoned we'd been spotted by an airplane. Anyway, I'd fired my torpedoes, so we went deep to avoid the inevitable counterattack from the surface escorts, which followed in due course. No great damage was done, and eventually we got away from them. And much later that day, when we were on the surface, in fact at about midnight, we'd been told to move our patrol position from the Aegean to the Gulf of Taranto. And we were just clearing the western end of Crete, and we ran into a slight swell which caused the submarine to start rolling. I was asleep in my bunk about midnight, and I was woken up by something going bonk, bonk, bonk overhead, clearly in the something rolling about in the casing. Well, this was anathema to any submariner, something making a noise like that, which would give your position away to anybody listening for you. So I told the officer of the watch to, on the bridge, to send somebody down to see what it was, if he could find out what it was, and to secure it, to stop it rolling about. I got a rather startled report back that there was what appeared to be one bomb lying on the fore casing just under the gun, and there was a hole in the casing by the gun which seemed to indicate that something had gone into the casing and which might be, you know, causing this noise. I went up on the bridge myself and went down to investigate, and sure enough there was a bomb lying on the casing, about 2 feet long, I suppose it was. I reckoned about a 50-kilogram bomb, 100-pound bomb. And there was a hole in the side of the gun casing that looked as though it had been made by another bomb from its size. And on further investigation, sure enough, there was another bomb in the inside the casing. So I sent for the first lieutenant and the second coxswain, who were the people normally concerned with the housekeeping and husbandry of the casing anyway, and told them to drag the first bomb lying on the casing up to the bows and get a sack and lower it over the side, and when they were ready I'd go full speed astern and they could drop it, let it go, which they duly did. I was fairly confident that the bombs themselves were not likely to go off, because we'd taken them down to a depth of 200 feet anyway in evading the counterattack after we'd been depth charged. So I thought they were probably safe, all right. But the bomb inside the casing was a much more difficult problem. The two men concerned had to get into the casing about the fore hatch and then crawl aft on their stomachs to get to the bomb underneath the gun, and then drag it back with them to the only opening where they could get it out, which was by the fore hatch, a matter of 30 feet or so on their stomachs or on their hands and knees, dragging this damn thing. And of course, the whole time that they were there, if we happened to be surprised by an enemy patrol, we'd have had to dive and they'd have been drowned. Which was not an easy thing for me to contemplate standing on the bridge. However, all went well, and eventually they got it out, took it up to the bows and dropped it over the front end, and we went on our way rejoicing.
What was the date of that? The date?
February the 16th, I think it was.
1942.
Another little sort of point about that. We'd been blitzed out of Alexandria in a hurry, I think as a result of probably an ultra message, to go and patrol north of Crete to intercept a certain ship. And we'd been sailed 48 hours in advance of what we'd been prepared to do. And it happened to be that we had the sale on Friday the 13th. Well, sailors never like sailing on a Friday anyway. Sort of traditionally, it's supposed to be unlucky. And the sale on Friday the 13th was doubly unlucky. However, it was lucky for some, anyway.
Just coming back to the attack on you by the swordfish, can you say something about the precautions which are taken to prevent one's own aircraft attacking one in a submarine?
Yes. We always sailed under what were known as bombing restrictions, and we had to keep within a moving area which advanced about 120 miles a day and was 20 miles broad, and we had to keep within that area, and all aircraft on anti-submarine patrol were briefed on the position of friendly submarines and their moving sanctuaries, and they were not allowed to attack submarines within those sanctuaries. In this particular case, the Swordfish air crew admitted that they had quite forgotten, in the excitement of getting a radar contact of the submarine on the surface, they'd quite forgotten that a British submarine was in the area.
How close did its fire come to you?
Well, one depth charge went off underneath the fore hatch, roughly, and they were set, I think, to go off at 50 feet. We were on the surface. And another two went off virtually alongside the engine room on the starboard side. The fourth one, I don't think it went off. Would you like me to elaborate a bit more on this?
If you would, please, yes.
It happened at about 9 o'clock or 9:30 in the evening, 2 hours after we'd sailed from Portside, and we dived for a trim. Surfaced again and set off on our course for our patrol area. Everything seemed settled. We were, as usual, zigzagging. It was a nice, clear night, a starlit night, and no problems. I left the bridge, went down below to have a supper. And as usual, I was sitting in my seat in the wardroom, my usual seat, which was the nearest to the control room in case I ever was called in an emergency. And something, I don't know to this day what it was, must have been an instinct or something like that, or a fifth sense, made me get up and leave the table with the intention of going on the bridge. I just had an urgent call to get on the bridge. There'd been no message from the bridge or from the control room. And I was just going through the watertight door between the wardroom and the control room when there was the most frightful explosion. The next thing I remember was picking myself up off the deck at the back end of the control room. All the lights had gone out, and I have a vivid recollection of the ship's galley, which was in the passageway abaft the control room, between the control room and the engine room, leaving the ship's side in a cloud of blue sparks. and being blown across, right across the passageway, the whole galley. While I was picking myself up, I heard the officer of the watch give the order to dive, and the watch on duty went through the motions, and sure enough, the main vents were opened, and we started to dive. And as we did so, I heard the Bren gun on the bridge open fire, so I knew that those on the bridge were all right. The officer of the watch and the lookouts then came down into the control room, and the officer of the watch said, who was the first lieutenant, said we'd been attacked by a swordfish. He'd seen it quite clearly as it came over, dropped its depth charges. There were no lights, no electric power. The three battery sections all seemed to be on fire, or each one seemed to be on fire and smoking and foul smells coming from it. But there were no major leaks of water anyway. So we stayed submerged until we'd more or less sorted ourselves out and got control of the situation and got the fires under control, and then surfaced, and clearly we were in no condition to continue with our patrol, so I decided we'd make a signal that we'd been attacked and were returning to port side damaged. It took some time to get the signal through, to summon up enough amps from our, in order to make the signal, and in the same way it took some time to get our main engines going, because we had no electric power. We had no compasses either. The main gyro was buzzing like an angry hive of bees on the deck of the control room. The magnetic compass was upside down, and our third standby, called Faithful Freddy, had been thrown out of its position in the conning tower and was also smashed. Having got to the surface all right and got the engines going and got a certain amount of emergency lighting going, we set off for still go back to port side. But the only way we could steer was by me standing on the bridge. I knew we were roughly north of port side, so I kept the pole star, which was conveniently showing, behind me, and just gave the order port a little, starboard a little, and steered ourselves back that way. Our main problem was the fact that our ballast tanks were leaking badly, and had to be blown with high pressure air about every 20 minutes to keep ourselves afloat. And we had no means of replenishing the HP air or using our low pressure system because there was no electricity. And fortunately, we just had enough high-pressure air to see us back into port side. I think we gave the last puff into our ballast tanks just as we were entering harbour. Considerably deeper draft than we'd left a few hours earlier.
What was the date of that?
This was August 42. Looking back on other patrols, there was one patrol in June 42, we started off in support of one of the Malta convoys which were being run, and we were patrolling an area in the central Mediterranean to try and ensure that if the Italian battle fleet came out to attack this Malta-bound convoy, that we might have a chance of intercepting them. They did in fact come out, and I did see them, but miles and miles away, and we never got within torpedo firing range of them. That was my only glimpse of the Italian battle fleet in my whole time in the Mediterranean. But I think my most satisfactory patrol was in June 42, when we'd been patrolling the Gulf of Sirte between Tripoli and Benghazi, and I think we sank two ships that patrol, and we're on our way back to Alexandria at the end of the patrol, at the end of June. And by then, the Eighth Army was in full retreat, and Rommel was racing towards Egypt, and we were rather racing Rommel, because our speed of advance was only about 120 miles a day, dive by day and on the surface at night. And suddenly, just when we were about north of Tobruk, we got a signal saying an enemy ship was due at 12 o'clock the next day to pass through a certain position, and that it was vitally important to sink this ship. So we stopped heading for Alexandria and turned around and went to this patrol position. Nothing appeared. But that night we got a further signal saying it was coming the next day, and at 12 o'clock it would be steering 180 degrees at 20 knots through a certain position, and it was vitally important to sink it. I wasn't too happy that we'd had an accurate navigational fix the night before, because star sights had not been possible, as it was an overcast morning but a clear day. However, I was hopeful that we'd sight this ship, and sure enough, at 11:40, the officer of the watch called me into the control room and said that there was a mast in sight due north. And about 20 minutes later, we fired six torpedoes at this ship, which was steering due south at 20 knots, as we'd been told. And we hit it with four of those six torpedoes. It was flat, calm weather, and so I'd been using very, very little periscope, showing very, very little periscope. And it wasn't until I put the periscope up, when I heard the first torpedo hit, that I actually realized there was an escort of four to six motor anti-submarine boats, or MGBs,